Welcome to the Boost Podcast with me, Graham Farmer. This week, I welcome Rob Maid from Champion Records. Now, Champion Records are celebrating 35 years in the business. They've released such seminal records such as Sandy B, Make the World Go Round, obviously the massive Robin S, Show Me Love, Ray's Break for Love, and they've got a brand new box set coming out. And I thought I'd use this opportunity to chat to Rob about Champion, the history, how they're signing records now, what sort of artists they're working with now, and also gives me his five things producers need to know. So let's dive in and chat to Rob. Hey Rob, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. How's everything over there?
I'm good, man. I'm good. It's been a fun and testing time. How has lockdown been for you?
Yeah, very much the same. In and out of the office, working a lot from here, home in the cabin at the bottom of the garden. Luckily, I've got a studio here, so it works quite well for me.
I love that you've got a cow cabin. I think that's my next. We've got a disco shed in our garden, but
amazing.
Not a work cabin.
Not a work cabin studio, especially with the success of your new single, mate.
It did all right, didn't it? It did okay, didn't it?
Yeah, really cool. Really cool to see you making beat.
It could have done with a few more sales, but it did all right across streams and radio, so I'm good with that.
I think we're all in that same boat at the moment, mate. But
it was a lovely learning experience. Let's just say that, and it's going to help lots of my artists as well, which is amazing.
Good stuff.
So we are going to talk about Champion and 30 years of Champion. But I thought we'd just kind of get you to introduce yourself to the people that are listening to this podcast that don't know who you are. First, tell us who you are, what you do, and how you got involved with Champion.
Right, so yeah, I'm Robin Tabor, otherwise known as Rob Maid. A lot of people probably know me for running Sleazy Deep Labels, a label called Sleazy G, and nurturing and bringing up some pretty big artists back in between 2012, 2014, with people like Amy Edge and Dance, Vinny Bassett, and a whole kind of new disco kind of sound that we kind of were, you know, at the forefront of. So yeah, I've been doing that for many years. I've been working in the industry for well over 20 years, starting at Amato Distribution, right through into more kind of digital distribution, and then working for Universal, Sony, and then going full-time DJing and being an artist myself.
Nice. Full-time DJ, that's good. That's been fun.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, being a DJ, I mean, I was on the circuit for 10 years, literally, as part of a duo called Two's Company. This was before I started properly.
Okay.
We were on every weekend at the Egg Key Club, 54 it was back then.
Yeah.
I mean, everywhere. The biggest residency was The Cross, though. That was absolutely my all-time favourite club.
I remember seeing you. I played at The Cross. I remember seeing your lineups now. Because I've seen this a few times where people have come out a little... They're like part of something else.
We were a part of the little crew that was the other big act that we were always playing a lot with was the Insurgents, which actually they ended up being, you know, Hypercolor, which was like Cedric Gervais. It was Cedric Mason.
That's right.
That went on to do Hypercolor. I went on to do Sleazy Deep.
Yeah.
And kind of just started taking the industry a lot more serious, wanted to be an artist myself rather than just a DJ. And that's how I started Sleazy Deep and Rob Maid and started making tracks there. Fast forward 4 or 5 years maybe, and yeah, I've been working. I was just working in the shed full time, doing music and DJing full time. But I got a call from Labelworks, Dom at Labelworks.
Yeah,
and he introduced me to the guys at Champion. Said they really need a new A&R guy, label manager, and would I be interested? And I was like, hell yeah, of course. No, so I mean, one of my all time favorite labels. You know, growing up with. You know, that early classic kind of house sound, which, you know, also one of my favourite ever records, Break for Love, was on there. So I went and met the guys, and yeah, the rest was history. I've been there for coming up to 2 years now.
Amazing. I guess that's a nice segue there. I wanted to just talk about your earliest memories of the label and kind of, I guess I've got some, you've got some. The label, it's obviously a seminal label now, and it's been around for, like I say, 30 years. So I thought we'd talk some records and talk about some records that you've kind of, that you have loved from Champion over the years.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, Show Me Love's a massive one. I mean, everyone loves that record still to this day. Probably sick of remixes of it. We're not guilty of putting them all out, though. I think there's probably about 100 a year, but hey-ho. No, I mean, the biggest record for me for Champion Records, which actually turned me into house music, I was very much a hardcore drum and bass raver when I was like 16, 17 kind of years old. And I first heard Break for Love when I didn't get into a rave with all my mates. I went back to one of our kind of like party houses in South Woodford with all the older lot, and they were all playing house music. And I'm sure it was retrospective of House CD. And on that CD, Break for Love was on there. And I just had it on loop most of the night. I just absolutely loved that track. And it really turned me into house music. I don't know what it is about. It's just, it's such a haunting, kind of moody track, but just a really upbeat bass line. And yeah, it just kind of really got me hooked into house music from there. But I mean, Champion, I mean, even when I started the job there, the amount of education I've had about how far music went back with them, with all the early stuff, you know, the kind of more electro, kind of soul stuff, even Sybil, Salt and Pepper. Like, I couldn't believe a lot of these.
Oh, wow, were. Did they do those as well? Wow.
Yeah, Salt and Pepper, Push It. That
wow.
I mean, there was so much stuff, you know, that I didn't know. And the actual history of how Champion Records started is a really good story, but maybe we can get into that a bit later.
Yeah, let's get into that for sure. I'd love to get there. Yeah, I love that track. I think mine was definitely Sunny B,
Make the World Go Round.
Make the World Go Round, yeah, that's definitely the track for me. It was part of, it was part of that original, you remember that old Ministry of Sound annual two, it was on there. And I think I must have, like you say, I kept replaying. I had it on CD, so kept hitting reverse on CD. And
it's that bass line. The funny thing about that track is, first vinyl I ever bought when I wanted to start, I was already kind of DJing, but I thought, right, I'm going to go to a record shop and actually buy my first kind of like 12 inches or whatever. And I actually bought Commissure, Let Me Show You.
Oh, right? Amazing.
Just to show my age of like, it was probably around, must be late 90s, yep. Early 2000s.
I late 90s, I guess, DJ, yeah.
Probably. But it was that bass line, right? And I never knew. That bass line was obviously ripped from Sandy B, Make the World Go Round, and Deep Dish, who obviously took that record, because there is no other versions of that record other than what Deep Dish did back in the day. But yeah, I mean, what a bass line.
Yeah, amazing. So let's talk about the history. I'm dead interested in the history. Let's talk about history of the label. Let's go into that, because that sounds super interesting.
Yeah, no, cool. So obviously, I mean, we're celebrating the 35th anniversary right now.
Yep.
The label does actually go back a little bit further than that, but this is the first time it actually was properly incorporated. Yep. Like many, many labels out there, I think you start, you're not 100% sure, it kind of takes a little bit of time, and then you've got to kind of catch up with yourself on the business side of things. So, but Mel Medali, right, so he's obviously the main boss of Champion Records, still comes in every now and then now, very much involved, loves to hear everything I'm doing and playing and whatnot. But yeah, the history of the house that I'm still working in Harlesden now goes back way, way back. So the start of Champion Records was when Mel Medali used to go to Bluebird Records. He started out with a label called Polo Records. This was much more kind of late 70s. It was a cross between Beach Boys covers and very disco stuff. Now, they put out his first record on Polo Records was a record called Dance Yourself Dizzy. Yeah.
Right.
Liquid Gold. And that went straight to number one. So,
wow.
Pretty bloody good A&R move for
anyone. Yeah.
So already doing quite well. He was in Edgware Road area, and all the A&R kind of guys back then used to go and hang out at Bluebird Records, which is a really famous old record shop. He met, I believe, Paul Oakenfold there, got Paul Oakenfold to come and work for him. But the actual chance meeting was with a guy called Ron Balding, and he owned Record Imports, and they used to import a lot of music from America. And as you know, a lot of that music was house music.
Yeah.
And they decided to set up a label next door to Record Imports. So they owned this house in Harlesden. Record Imports was one half of it, and Champion Records started as the other half of it.
Amazing.
The clever part of the business was, Ron Balding was importing these records, seeing how they did in London. When one went off, Mel would then go and license it from America, recut it, 45, nice heavyweight DJ kind of vinyl, and then end up selling it back to America and throughout the UK. So that is how it all kind of started. So they were very, very prominent in introducing this country to house music in those early days.
Wow. You know?
And that, it's a hotbed around Harlesden, all there, Park Royal. That was where a lot of the distribution, manufacturing, all of that was happening around there, the mastering houses. So it was a kind of a hotbed for music, and especially the kind of dance music stuff that was going on at the time. So yeah, I mean, there is a hell of a lot of history in that house. They're still in that house now. It's got better decor now than it did than back then. But yes, I mean, that is how Champion Records kind of started. Obviously, Paul Oakenfold came on board. You know, there's a whole lot of history there. Obviously, with the Ibiza trip, with Paul Oakenfold and Johnny Walker at the time, with Danny Rampling and those guys, they went over there to find out what was going on with a record called King Kina, Jungle Fever. Apparently, it was like Alfredo was out there and they were exporting loads of records out there. And this is like 85, 86. Mm-hmm. And wanted to know why, what was going on with this record in Ibiza. So that's why they went over there to investigate what was going on. And then they come back, Acid House is a new thing, and the rest is history type thing. So, you know, there's a lot of cool stories out there.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. So to be a part of that, and I'm learning a lot of this myself. I mean, I was on the radio on Thursday with Andy Smith, one of our latest artists at the moment. He actually goes back away. He's on Street Sounds Radio, but he was actually educating me on some of the early stuff because he had a 2-hour show and he was playing a lot of all the early stuff, which is the electro breaks, kind of really cool stuff. I mean, some of the, I can't remember the bloody name of it. Is it Whistle or something like that? It's just a really, really big electro dance record that everyone knows. I think Public Enemy sampled it. I think NWA sampled
wow,
it.
Wow, okay.
You know, so I'll have to dig it out. And
Yeah, find it. I mean, I want to hear it. I'm sure it'll be on a Discogs or somewhere. I can probably find the name.
Of course.
And then, so let's get forward. What's the kind of, let's talk about current. I'm all about current.
Yeah.
What is the current, where are you currently and what's the plans?
So my ethos coming into the label was Champion's always been very just dance music across the board. Predecessor before me, you know, we've always covered that kind of span. So I wanted it to be like that. But I also wanted the music to be commercially viable and crossover. But sometimes we'll have an underground record, which I'm really happy with, working guys like King and Early doing the more melodic progressive stuff. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to have a host of new artists that we can bring up, nurture, and kind of build our own new ecosystem around the label, much like they did back in the day. And, you know, it's going to take a bit of time and we're working the socials. You know, the thing coming into Champion Records was that all of their fame and success, like guys like us know about it, but it was so pre-social media.
Yeah.
And I'm coming on board, you know, and trying to turn that around and re-educate. So a lot of this 35th anniversary box set and everything is a bit of re-education around that for the younger people, so to understand, you know, the history of the label, the importance of the label. And then I'm working on as many new kind of projects, and we've got some really good house stuff. We've got some really good dance kind of crossover commercial kind of records. At the moment, with the new one that's out at the minute, we've actually got a drum and bass remix from Blame.
Nice.
A record I brought over from Hooge Tunes, which I just love this record. So it was Andy Smith that I talked about, Mr. and Mrs. Smith. He came to us with the idea that bringing the track over to Champion, which I really enjoyed and thought, you know, this is a great record back in the day for me. I think it was first out in 96. So I wanted to put a new spin on it. So I've done a mix of that. We've got Blame. He's done a really good drum and bass mix, which is really cool to put some drum and bass out on Champion.
That's cool.
A really good breaks mix from Neontronics, and Andy Smith, the original artist, has done a more clubby kind of now mix, which is really cool. But moving forward, we've got coming up, next up, we have Skeleton Keys featuring Annalisa Lamola. She's actually really well known for her track with Icarus, King Kong. It's really cool, actually. The guys delivered an instrumental track to me. I've been working with a really great talented singer-songwriter called Lauren Lamont. She's currently working with like Nothing Else Matters and Tool Room, along with ourselves, with King and Early. So I really wanted a vocal on this track that Skeleton Keys kind of brought to us. And I gave it to Lauren, and within a day or two, she'd written and sung the vocal. But we thought, you know, it would be really good to kind of get a bit of a diva-y, kind of bigger kind of vocal, a bit more fun kind of vibes for the record. So she suggested Annalisa that she knew, who sung King Kong, who I just thought, wow, that's amazing. It's really, really suits the record. And it's a really apt message in there. So, you know, it's the whole song's all about dancing in a nightclub. Actually, one of the messages is, you won't stop me dancing. So, you know, it could be quite good for this kind of time. It's a very happy, upbeat record, fun record that we hope we can kind of cross over. And then after that, we've got some really
exciting project. Did you want to put that vocal on because of the where we are in the world? What was the decisions behind? You heard the track and I want a vocal on that. Let's just go
into
that.
Yeah, I mean, the track actually came to me, you know, in its first form over a year ago, and I worked with Skeleton Keys because I just heard a bit in it. It was very festival, very hooky and crossover kind of potential in there. Yep. So we worked on that kind of instrumental for quite some time. Delivering the track over to Lauren, you know, she's amazing. She's just a really good writer, and she definitely writes lyrics that we kind of wanted that kind of fun aspect and feel. And what she delivered just really kind of like hit the message right on the head, you know. So we're really excited about that. And then Annalisa just did an amazing job in the studio, just laid the track down. Really fun, good, high, upbeat record. Look forward to everyone hearing that one. And then moving forward, we've got so many really cool signings coming up. We've got a really cool guy called Fubu. He's working with a singer called Lightning. Really cool track on that one. And a really, really cool project that I can't wait to get out is an act called Echo Fly and Beyond Therapy. And that's Ollie Jacobs and Dougal. And it's a real kind of ravey, old school, hardcore, but now house kind of track. And it's actually featuring Angie Brown. So it's kind of got all the pedigree.
That's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah, exactly. So
how far in advance are you signing? And I guess what type of artist are you looking for? Or are you working with? Like what level?
On what level? So it all depends really. You know, I'm happy to build up an act from the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, as long as the music and they've got, you know, an amount of kind of work and a vision and something that we can kind of like buy into, you know.
Do they have to show you that kind of thing at the start? Do you kind of go right here? Do they come with you a load of tracks and go, this is the idea, this is the music?
I mean, a lot of the time, I mean, I've built up, because I've been in the industry for so long now, I've built up quite a nice network of friends around me, you know, with regards to Facebook Messenger, my emails out there, everybody kind of knows me. As soon as I put the feelers out that I was going to be working a champion and I needed a bit more crossover music rather than just the underground stuff, loads of people just kind of came out of the woodwork straight away. And these are kind of people that I respect and have been working and known with for some time, you know. So that kind of happened quite naturally. Other than that, demos that come in, yes, sign stuff. You send me stuff for Cheeky Tracks, which has been really cool. I'm very open to anything. I mean, obviously, we do appreciate, you know, artists that do nurture and take time on themselves and look at their socials and understand that side of the game, because it is very much a huge part of what an artist, DJ, producer has to do, you know, today. It's not just on the merit of the music. However, I do first and foremost look at the music, and something I believe in, then hopefully it's something everybody else could believe in too.
Has your like the way you signed changed over the last 6 months?
A little bit. I mean, obviously, I mean, even with Cheeky Tracks, the Cheeky Tracks was very much a tech house, big room, club, you know, force of music. And without the clubs, it makes it a little bit harder. You know, more people listening to music at home, not necessarily wanting that kind of stuff, probably a little bit more vocal. So definitely taking things like that into consideration. Champion, I'm definitely, you know, I always want that. I don't want it to just be a DJ niche label, you know, just for DJs. I really want it to translate and to prescribe to the world, you know. That's
cool.
At the heart of any label, you know, someone like Defected, you know, they have a massive loyal fan base, which is something I really want to build the label up to, which, you know, I know it's going to take time, but with the history and the amount of amazing new talent that is coming in and is around us that we're working and building up, there's no reason why we can't get there in the future.
That's cool. Did you have to, I mean, you said that you kind of had to change from a like that social point of view for the label. Have you had to kind of build lots of stuff for streams and build lots of stuff for social? And
very much so. I mean, we've got a really good guy who's come on board, Dave. He's done a really good job with our socials. So it's not just, you know, buy, sell. It's actually trying to create a more engaging environment and some, you know, great stuff to look at, making sure it's visually, you know, aesthetically looks great. Making sure the website and everything's really cool. But I think having engaging content is so much better than just, you know, buy links here, there and everywhere.
Yeah, of course.
Trying to get people involved and excited about stuff in the future.
I guess build community as well, because I guess your community is would have been a lot older.
A much older fan base, and this is it. So obviously we need to translate down to the younger age groups and make sure, you know, everything that we're doing, it's either a kind of like we're looking at it from an educational perspective, especially with a lot of the older stuff. So we've got a lot of cool older content. Mm-hmm. But the music, I do feel, is very much aimed at a younger, you know, demographic moving up.
Cool. So
the older classic people heads should also still enjoy and like what we're doing, you know, because we're still using some of the old school actual, you know, records, remaking those, doing that, as well as introducing a lot of new music and new artists, which I think is the most important thing for me in my job and in what I'm doing. Yes, the classics are great. I love getting hold of them and remixing them and getting decent people on board to make mixes of those records. That's, you know, that's our bedrock, as it was. But
yes,
forward, the new artists for me is where, you know, in 5 years' time, we could have another Faithless. We could have, you know, another Dido. I mean, obviously, Dido is not really, you know, where Champion's going now.
Mm.
However, you know, I'm very open to everything across the board, I suppose, is probably the best way to kind of put it.
Obviously, this is a podcast for new producers as well. Before I jump into that, let's just talk about the box set, how that came about, what's on it, and what are the highlights for you.
Right. So, I mean, I approached this project at the end of, it's got to be the last quarter of 2019. Raj, he's very much involved in the label, sit there day to day with him. And, you know, the 35th anniversary was coming up and we wanted to do something really special. A lot of the old reissues, which we did, was for the 25th or so. It would have been 10 years prior. And a lot of those vinyls that went out, they were a lot of the classics on single 12 inches, but there was four tracks on every record, right? And me as a DJ or a collector, I want a 12 inch original proper heavyweight cut version of those club tracks, and I'm pretty sure everyone else would, you know, like to get their hands on that as well. So we kind of decided, right, let's go for a box set. I kind of came up with the kind of color idea and stuff, and then we went to the artist and they kind of designed the box, but I was very, you know, hands-on with how I wanted it to aesthetically look and feel. And I wanted it to be a really nice piece to collect for collectors, you know. The tracks on there, I mean, it was a no-brainer how to kind of work that out, because there are the key artists. Obviously, you've got Robin S on one disc. That's a 12-inch of Show Me Love, Stonebridge Mix, and Stonebridge Mix of Love for Love. We've obviously got Sandy B, both of her two biggest tracks, Deep Dish Mixes, which I did actually have to edit down for the vinyl because I wanted that heavyweight cut, and they were like 12 and a half minutes, the original. Yeah, so I didn't want those to be 33. I wanted them 45 and cut. So sorry, Deep Dish, I did actually edit your tracks down a little bit for that. but still sound amazing. What else we got on there? The Rays, there's the two versions of Break for Love. So it was Our Tribe, which is actually Rollo and Rob Dugan. Their version of Break for Love and the original 12-inch mix of that. Mm-hmm. Christine W, I couldn't pick just two of her records. So this is the one vinyl that's got four tracks on it, sadly, right, cool, for everyone. But, you know, she's just got such a great catalogue on Champion. She was discovered in Vegas by Mel. I mean, amazing. You brought her over.
Wow. And
smashed those tracks out of the hat straight away, you know, in the studio with Rolo. So that's like one more try, feel what you want. Other than that, we've got Stax Joy, which is just an amazing upbeat, happy record, really, really cool tune. And then finishing off with the OT Quartet, which again was Rolo under another name.
Wow, so many aliases.
He's got so many aliases. I mean, what an amazing producer, and obviously went on to be the main force behind Faithless and, mm-hmm, and his sister Dido.
Yeah.
Which is,
what's with the colour thing? Is there a sequence to that, or is there a meaning to it?
The kind of, I wanted the boxing to be kind of like matte black, and then the logo to have that kind of mirrored finish. And I just wanted to import some colour in there somehow, because I don't know if anyone sees my covers or any artworks I've been across my labels. I always love a bit of bright colour. They actually did dampen down the colours, my original kind of concept. But yeah, the idea was that there's six vinyls. Why doesn't each one represent a colour? So the first disc is red, and then so on and so forth. And
right, cool.
It just ties the whole thing together, and it just looks really cool.
It does look cool. It does look cool. Those people, go and grab one, because it does look cool. I think it should sound cool as well. Sounding amazing. Okay, let's jump into producer stuff. I thought I'd kind of give... We have a series called What Five Things Does Producer Need to Know? So I thought I'd get your What Five Things Does Producer Need to Know?
Wow. Right, so, I mean, me as a producer, the last 20, 22 years, probably the first 5 years of that, I ignored EQ, right? For some reason, just ignored EQ, didn't really want to understand it. I did everything in my headphones. And I did good. I actually made some pretty good wealth of tracks. I toured the world off the back of them, so that kind of helped. But when I started to really understand mixing and EQ and, you know, how to, when to use things and when not to, and that is a really important lesson. And it was like, don't be afraid of learning something outright. It would have saved me a hell of a lot of time, I think. So yeah, using EQ, the most important for me is subtractive EQ, low cut, you know, low cut everything apart from your kick and your bass. You don't need anything under 30 hertz. You know, that's invisible to the ear and it would just muddy up your mix. So that's one major important thing for me. Don't get sidetracked, because I did this for a long time when I built this studio. I got sidetracked in the technicalities of mix downs and mixing down, right? When I went from headphones under the cupboard in my house, under the cupboard stairs, that's where I was with my headphones and just my Mac, that was it. I built this.
I love the thought of that, by the way. You just sort of sat under the stairs going, get this mix right.
I could stand there, luckily. But yeah, I got really, really got bogged down with the thought of, my track doesn't sound good enough. I need to be worried about the mix down stage right in the beginning. And because I got all this new kit, I was like, you know, watching so many videos, and it was just too much information, and I just lost my vibe, right? And everything, it should be about fun in the first most. So when you start a project, just have fun with it. Don't worry about the kick. Don't worry about tidying it up. Don't worry about any of that. Just get the main music. Because back in the day, they didn't have, you know, everything was about the music and how it was made. And it wasn't about the mix down and how can I get the best mix. Because back then, it wasn't the best mix downs of stuff. You listen to it. But the way stuff was put together and the actual musicality of it and how it works on the dance floor, that is the most important thing to me. So I think that's something that's really, really important when starting a project, is to not worry about the mix side of things. Just have fun with it, you know, in the beginning.
Okay, that's cool. Number three.
Yep, so three. Having somebody you trust that's close to you, that's in the music industry, that you can share your ideas with, and you can share your music and your tracks with. Having that network of people around you, you know, that can give advice. You know, I've always had somebody like that since when I was way back at React, when everything was on AIM Messenger. You know, I've had a few certain key people that I trusted and I worked with, and I always sent stuff to. Joel Xavier being one of those guys, you know, he's always been there for me. I used to always send my early stuff. When I wasn't too sure on it myself, you know, just to get that output. And, you know, I had so much respect for him with his Kinky Vinyl and Work Records and all of that. So I think actually having somebody that can not nurture, but just kind of like, you know, egg you on in the right direction, I suppose, which is good to kind of have that network. And that's one side of things. I think going on to four, social, your socials, and that's being, you know, you do need to be active on your social media, as much as, you know, artists and people shy away from that. You know, we like to sit in darkened rooms listening to the music, but people want to know and hear about what you're up to and what you're doing on a kind of daily basis. I'm guilty of not really doing that, if I'm honest. So busy with the labels, I am very much, you know, this is out now, this is coming up, you know, rather than just, you know, taking a cool picture in the studio or doing a little snippet of a track I'm working on. You know, I really have to do that. But, you know, I'm one of the older ones. Yeah, you younger kids out there, you've got no excuse.
And number five, we're there on number five.
Don't get bogged down on needing all the gear. I think a lot of us producers are like this. We probably spend way too much money, far too much money on plugins and wanting the next best thing, wanting all that UAD stuff, wanting all that hardware. Learn something, you know, there's, you know, 5, 6, 7 key things that you need in production, you know, a good reverb, a good compression, a good idea of busing change, you know, your drum chain, your reverb chain. Just find a plugin and really stick to it, really learn it and really use it. And then the more you use it, you're going to understand it. And then when you start to use other makes or other things, you'll actually understand a hell of a lot more the different types of color that it brings. And, you know, a lot of it's subtractive rather than, you know, adaptive, I suppose. And rather than making everything sound louder and bigger, it's the more you take away is actually how you get a bigger sound, which I know it sounds crazy and it doesn't make sense. It's kind of a bit of a, what? It's very true. You know, the more you take away, the more you can get out of it in the final process, which
this is more
should true. Always be done by a professional.
That was amazing. Thank you for those five. I'm glad you're on that series now. And thanks. They were incredible tips. I hope you all got something out of that, listeners. I've got two other things I want to talk about. Firstly, I think you learn from your mistakes. So what is your biggest mistake and what have you learned from it?
Biggest mistake and what have I learned from it? I probably jumped in the deep end back in 2015 with my label Sleazy Deep. I had a very, very, very big offer for the label. To bring it in a part of their wing, I won't say who. And it was like a dream come true. I was floating on air, I got taken out to Miami, I was flying back and forth from Amsterdam. Might be a little hint in there.
Was you spinning around?
It wasn't spinning around. I kind of fell for the kind of glitz and glamour of it all. But it was definitely something that I don't think my label needed in the end. It did go a little bit wrong because the deal went from a certain amount right down to a very lesser amount because of the amount of samples that were actually on the label that they weren't too aware of in the beginning, which, you know, it was just kind of a bad time. And I did learn from that, I should stick to my own guns in what I'm doing and believing in what I'm doing.
Did that hurt your arm, mom?
Nah.
I was trying to get that.
It did. And what happened, you know, there, it wasn't nice. We are all friends again now, by the way, which is a really good thing. You know, I love what they do. I think it's a brilliant thing. But, I am glad it didn't actually go through in the end.
And then finally, I thought I'd just finish with, what do you hope for 2021?
I really hope for things to kind of get back to normal. I think we just need to learn to live with what's happening in the world right now. I think we should take a leaf out of Sweden's book. and I just really hope that, you know, we do get our industry back, that everyone gets their industries back, no matter what industry you're working in. I know it's tough out there for absolutely everybody in every kind of field. I just hope that, you know, our music and anything and everything that I'm doing can bring as much happiness and joy to the people that we're pushing it out to, and hopefully, yeah, and it brings them as much happiness as it does me doing this job and creating tracks and making music for the people.
Amazing. That's a lovely to end on. Thank you, my friend. Thank you for joining me on the podcast.
I know. We finally did it.
I know. You're feeling better. That's good.
Yeah. The teeth are good.
Oh, man. It sounded horrible. So thank you very much for joining me on the podcast. It's been great to chat to you, Rob. For those that go on, for those that are listening, go and get the Champion box sets. It looks amazing. I can't wait to get mine in the post.
It's coming, Graham, don't worry.
And I'll see you very soon, my friend. I thought we'd bump into it at BMC this week, but obviously.
I know, it's BMC this week, and then this time last year, pretty much, it would have been in Amsterdam, wouldn't it?
So, yeah.
Bad time around, isn't it?
So it's good to see your face.
Yeah, you too, buddy. Take care, and hopefully we will be at the proper BMC come March.
April.
Are you aiming to be doing it?
April 29 and 30 next year.
Brilliant. Fingers crossed for that one.
I'll see you soon, bud.
Take care. Cheers, Graham.
Thanks again for listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have, please go, if you're listening to an Apple podcast, please go and give it a rating, give it a thumbs up, share it. It really helps the podcast grow on Apple Podcasts and help it goes up the chart, which means we can get bigger guests with bigger numbers, and which gives you more information and more tips. Thanks so much again for joining us. I hope you enjoyed it. I'll see you next time. I've been Graham Farmer. Bye.